head, a door banged. My heart missed a beat, and Rochester muttered an oath as he stumbled into an oak chest. I quickly relit the candelabrum. In the warm glow, we could see each other's timorous faces, and Rochester, realizing that my face was a reflection of his own, steeled himself to the task ahead and shouted, "Coward! Show yourself!" There was a loud concussion and a bright orange flash as Rochester fired off a shot in the direction of the staircase leading to the upper rooms. There he goes, like a rabbit. I fancy I winged him too. We hurried to the spot, but there was no blood, merely the heavy lead ball embedded in the banister rail. "We have him!" exclaimed Rochester. "There is no escape from up here except the roof, and no way down without risking his neck on the guttering." We climbed the stairs and found ourselves in the upper corridor. The windows were larger up here, but even so the interior was still insufferably gloomy. We stopped abruptly. Halfway down the corridor, standing in the shadows and with his face lit by the light of a single candle, was Hades. Running and hiding were not his style at all. He was holding the lighted candle close to a rolled-up piece of paper that I knew could only be the Wordsworth poem in which my aunt was imprisoned. "The code word, if you will, Miss Next?"
"Never."
He placed the candle closer to the paper and smiled at me.
"The code word, please."
But his smile became an expression of agony. He let out a wild cry, and the candle and poem fell to the ground. He turned slowly to reveal the cause of his pain. There, on his back, and clinging on with grim determination, was Mrs. Rochester, the madwoman from Jamaica. She cackled maniacally, and twisted a pair of scissors that she had buried between Hades' shoulder blades. He cried out once again, and fell to his knees as the flame from the lit candle set fire to the layers of wax polish that had built up on a bureau. The flames greedily enveloped the piece of furniture, and Rochester pulled some curtains down in order to smother them. But Hades was up again, his strength renewed. The scissors had been withdrawn. He swiped at Rochester and caught him on the chin. Edward reeled and fell heavily to the floor. A manic glee seemed to overcome Acheron as he took a spirit lamp from the sideboard and hurled it to the end of the corridor. It burst into flames and ignited some wall hangings. He turned on the madwoman, who went for him in a blur of flailing limbs. She deftly whipped Mycroft's battered instruction booklet from Hades' pocket, gave a demonic and triumphant cry, and then ran off.
"Yield, Hades!"
I yelled, firing off two shots. Acheron staggered with the force of the slugs, but recovered quickly and ran after Bertha and the book. I picked up the precious poem and coughed in the thick smoke that had started to fill the corridor. The drapes were now well alight. I dragged Rochester to his feet. We ran after Hades, noticing as we did so that other fires had been started by Acheron in his pursuit of the instruction manual and the insane Creole. We caught up with them in a large back bedroom. It seemed as good a moment as any to open the portal. The bed was ablaze, and Hades and Bertha were playing a bizarre game of cat and mouse, with her holding the booklet and brandishing the scissors at him, something he seemed to be genuinely fearful of.
"Say the words," I said to Rochester.
"And they are?"
"Sweet madness."
Rochester yelled them. Nothing. He yelled them even louder.
Still nothing.
I had made a mistake. Jane Eyre was written in the first-person narrative. Whatever was being read by Bowden and Mycroft back home was what Jane was experiencing. Anything that happened to us didn't appear in the book, and never would. I hadn't thought of this.
"Now what?" asked Rochester.
"I don't know. Look out!"
Bertha made a wild lunge at us both and ran out of the door, swiftly followed by Hades, who was so intent on regaining the instruction manual that the two of us seemed of secondary importance. We followed them down the corridor, but the stairwell was now a wall of flame, and the heat and smoke pushed us back. Coughing and with eyes streaming, Bertha escaped onto the roof with Hades, myself and Rochester not far behind. The cool air was welcome after the smoky interior of Thornfield. Bertha led us all down onto the lead roof of the ballroom. We could see that the fire had spread downstairs, the heavily polished furniture and floors giving the hungry flames plenty of nourishment. Within a few minutes, the large and tinder-dry house would be an inferno. The madwoman was dancing a languid dance in her nightclothes, a dim memory, perhaps, from the time when she was a lady, and a far cry from the sad and pathetic existence she now endured. She growled like a caged animal and threatened Hades with the scissors as he cursed and entreated the return of the booklet, which she waved at him in a mocking fashion. Rochester and I watched, the shattering of windows and the crackle of the fire punctuating the silence of the night. Rochester, annoyed at having nothing to do and tiring of watching his wife and Hades dancing the dance macabre, loosed off the second pistol and hit Hades in the small of the back. Hades turned, unhurt but enraged. He drew his own gun and fired several shots in return as Rochester and I leapt behind a chimney stack. Bertha took full advantage of the opportunity and plunged the scissors deep into Hades' arm. He yelled in pain and terror and dropped his gun. Bertha danced happily around him, cackling wildly as Hades fell to his knees. A groan made me turn. One of Acheron's shots had passed straight through Rochester's palm. He pulled out his handkerchief, and I helped him wrap it around his shattered hand. I looked up again as Hades knocked the scissors from his arm. They flew through the air and landed close by. Powerful again, and as angry as a lion, he leapt upon Bertha, held her tightly by the throat, and retrieved the booklet. He then picked her up and held her high above his head, she all the while uttering a demented yell that managed to drown out the sound of the fire. For a moment they were silhouetted against the flames that even now licked up against the night sky. Then Hades took two quick steps to the parapet and threw Bertha over, her yell only silenced by the dull thud as she hit the ground three stories below. He stepped back from the parapet and turned to us with eyes blazing.
"Sweet madness, eh?" he laughed. "Jane is with her cousins. The narrative is with her. And I have the manual."
He waved it at me, deposited it in his pocket, and picked up his gun.
"Who first?"
I fired, but Hades clapped his open hand on the approaching bullet. He opened his fist. The slug was flattened into a small lead disc. He smiled, and a shower of sparks flew up behind him. I fired again, and he caught the slug once more. The slide on my automatic parked itself in the rearward position, empty and ready for the next clip. I had one, but I didn't think it would make much difference. The inevitable presented itself. I'd had a good run, survived him more than any other living person, and done all that was humanly possible. But luck doesn't always walk in your favour. Mine had just run out. Hades smiled at me.
"Timing is everything, Miss Next. I have the password, the manual, and the upper hand. The waiting game, as you can see, paid off."
He looked at me with a triumphant expression.
"It may come as some consolation that I plan to bestow upon you the honour of being Felix Nine. I will remember you always as my greatest adversary. I salute you for it. And you were right. You never did negotiate."
I wasn't listening. I was thinking about Tamworth, Snood, and the rest of Hades' victims. I looked across at Rochester, who was cradling his blood-soaked hand. The fight had gone out of him.
"The Crimea will make us a fortune," went on Hades. "How much profit can we make on each plasma rifle? £500, £1,000, £10,000?
I thought of my brother in the Crimea. He had called for me to come back for him, but I never did. My APC was hit by an artillery shell as I returned. I had to be forcibly restrained from taking another vehicle and returning to the battlefield. I never saw him again. I had never forgiven myself for leaving him. Hades was still rambling, and I found myself almost wishing that he'd get on with it. Death, after all I had been through, suddenly seemed like a very comfortable option. At the height of any battle, some say that there is a quietness where one can think calmly and easily, the trauma of the surroundings screened off by the heavy curtain of shock. I was about to die, and only one seemingly banal question came to mind. Why on earth did Bertha's scissors have such a detrimental effect on Hades? I looked up at Acheron, who was mouthing words that I could not hear. I stood up, and he fired. He was merely playing with me, and the bullet flew wide. I didn't even blink. The scissors were the key. They had been made of silver. I reached into my trouser pocket for the silver bullet that Spike had given me. Acheron, vain and arrogant, was wasting time with pompous self-congratulation. He would pay dearly for the error. I slipped the shiny slug into my automatic and released the slide. It chambered the round smoothly. I aimed, pulled the trigger, and saw something pluck at his chest. For a moment, nothing happened. Then, Acheron stopped talking and put his hand to where the round had hit home. He brought his fingers up to his face and looked at them with shocked surprise. He was used to having blood on his hands, but never his own. He turned to me, started to say something, but then staggered for a moment before pitching heavily forward onto his face and moving no more. Acheron Hades, third most evil man on the planet, was finally dead, killed on the roof of Thornfield Hall, and mourned by no one. There was little time to ponder Hades' demise. The flames were growing higher. I took my cross manual and then pulled Rochester to his feet. We made our way to the parapet. The roof had grown hot, and we could feel the beams beneath our feet starting to flex and buckle, causing the lead roof to ripple as though it were alive. We looked over, but there was no way down. Rochester grasped my hand and ran along the roof to another window. He smashed it open, and a blast of hot air made us duck.
"Seventh staircase," he coughed. "This way."
Rochester knew the way through the dark and smoky corridor by feel, and I followed him obediently, clutching his jacket tails to stop myself getting lost. We arrived at the top of the servant staircase. The fire didn't seem to be as strong here, and Rochester led me down the steps. We were halfway down when a fireball flared up in the kitchen and sent a mass of fire and hot gases through the corridor and up the staircase. I saw a huge red glow erupt in front of me as the stairway gave way beneath us. After that, blackness. Chapter 34. Nearly the end of their book. We waited for Thursday's call, the code word, but it didn't come. I read the narrative carefully, looking for some clue as to what had happened to her. I had suspected that Thursday might decide to stay if it was impossible to capture Hades. The denouement was drawing near. Jane would go to India, and the book would end. Once that had happened, we could switch the machine off. Thursday and Polly would be lost forever. From Bowden Cable's journal. I opened my eyes, frowned, and looked around. I was in a small yet well-furnished room, quite close to a half-open window. Across the lawn, some tall poplars swayed in the breeze, but I didn't recognise the view. This was not Thornfield. The door opened, and Mary walked in. "Miss Next," she said kindly. "What a fright you gave us." "Have I been unconscious long?"
3 days. A very bad concussion, Dr. Carter said.
"Where?"
"You're at Ferndean, Miss Next," replied Mary soothingly. "One of Mr. Rochester's other properties. You will be weak. I'll bring some broth."
I grabbed her arm. "And Mr. Rochester?" She paused and smiled at me, patted my hand, and said she would fetch the broth. I lay back, thinking about the night Thornfield burned. Poor Bertha Rochester. Had she realised that she had saved our lives by her fortuitous choice of weapons? Perhaps somewhere in her addled mind she was in tune with the abomination that had been Hades. I would never know, but I thanked her anyway. Within a week, I was able to get up and move about, although I still suffered badly from headaches and dizziness. I learned that after the servant's staircase had collapsed, I had been knocked unconscious. Rochester, in great pain himself, had wrapped me in a curtain and dashed with me from the burning house. He had been hit by a falling beam in the attempt and was blinded. The hand shattered by Acheron's bullet had been amputated the morning following the fire. I met with him in the darkness of the dining room.
"Are you in much pain, sir?"
I asked, looking at the bedraggled figure. He still had bandaged eyes.
"Luckily, no," he lied, wincing as he moved.
"Thank you. You have saved my life for a second time." He gave a wan smile.
"You returned my Jane to me. For those few months of happiness, I would suffer twice these wounds. But let us not speak of my wretched state.
You are well? Thanks to you."
"Yes, yes. But how will you return? I expect Jane is already in India by now with that gutless Pantaloon Rivers, and with her goes the narrative. I don't see your friends being able to rescue you."
"I will think of something," I said, patting him on the sleeve.
You never know what the future will bring.